From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 10th day of February 2009. Happy birthday to my brother Rob. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, we'll stick with the basics. USDA released a couple of important reports this morning. Darrell Good would tell us later that the U.S. numbers weren't terribly exciting, but that the global figures reflected more of the dry weather conditions in South America than many had thought would be the case. And we'll talk to the U of I Ag economist about those numbers and get his take on the new acre program, too. We'll close out our program, as always is the case, by discussing the agricultural weather forecast today with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You remember last year at about this time we started talking about persistence as it pertained to the wet weather in the Midwest? Well, Don will tell us it's setting up again. Stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat at 5.56, 9 cents lower on the afternoon. May futures at 5.69, down 9. In July, the harvest month, 9 cents lower at 5.81.5. Kansas City May wheat at 5.99¾, down 6¼. Corn futures, nearby contract, 3.76¾, down 3/4. May at 3.87, a penny lower. In July at 3.97¼, down 1¼. September corn at 407.5, a penny and a quarter lower. In December contract, the new crop at 420.5, down 1¼ as well. Crude oil trading $2 and a penny lower for the day. Ethanol down 0.4 cents, and the RBOB gasoline is 0.35 cents lower. Soy complex beans are trading $9.94, down 8 cents at the end of the day for their settlement price. In the nearby March, the May at $10.25. Down 7¼, and July beans at $10.07¼, down 7¼. August futures, $9.98, 6 cents lower. November beans down 4 at $9.39. March bean meal at $3.12.10, $1.70 lower. March bean oil, $0.59 lower at $33.64. Feb live cattle, 7½ cents higher at $84.77½. The March feeders at $95.70, 15 cents higher, and lean hogs at $56.75, up 70 cents on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. March crude oil futures are down $2 and a penny at $37.55 a barrel. April crude at $43.76, 2.08 lower for the afternoon. March ethanol just about 0.4 cents lower at $1.61¼. Natural gas at $4.55, down 25¼ cents. And the RBOB at $1.25 even, 3 cents higher. Heating oil, diesel fuel, $1.31. 4¾ cents lower. Propane at 67¾ cents, 1¼ cents higher on the afternoon. And gold futures at $913.70, trading at $21.30 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day at 78.92 is just about 378 points lower on the afternoon. And the CRB index now stands at 218.90. That's down 5.01. The U.S. dollar at 85.80. is down point, rather up 0.93 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, as prepared by our own Mike Sola. He says a flash flood will be in effect for much of southwestern Illinois from late tonight through Wednesday morning. Flood watches will be in effect for all of central and northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana from late tonight through tomorrow afternoon, and north central and northeastern Indiana from late tonight through tomorrow night. High wind watches will be in effect for southern Illinois and much of Indiana for various times, beginning late tonight and running through Thursday morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies across the two-state. Windy, as you've already heard. Showers and thunderstorms will become more numerous and spread from south tonight to the north overnight. Lows will range from 35 in northwestern Illinois to 58 in the far southern part of Illinois. And then tomorrow, cloudy skies, windy, widespread showers, thunderstorms early in the day. Some storms will produce heavy rainfall on Wednesday of this week. That's tomorrow.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. We're always joined by the folks over at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Wayne Nelson is on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, friend and compadre of yours and I will be together tonight at Mantino for an Outlook panel there. I think that's at the Tuscany Steakhouse. It's not too hard to find. Should be a lot of fun. Jackie Vakes will be along. So will Kurt Kimmel. And then you're on one of those. We have three or four panels this week that will be out and about. You're on a couple at least over the next few days, I think, too, aren't you?
Yes. We're going to be joining Chuck Shelby for one in Lafayette and then one down in Terre Haute here coming up in the next week. So
yeah,
we're looking forward to those and getting to see some of our old friends in the areas down that way.
Well, there's one tonight. That's at the Tuscany Steak and Pasta House in Mantino. Tomorrow at the Richards Farm Restaurant in Casey, up at the University Inn in Lafayette, Indiana on Friday, and then next week at the Ford County Farm Bureau Building in Gilman. So it's a really big, well, and the Holiday Inn in Terre Haute, that's the one you're going to be at. That's on the 17th next week. So it's a really busy time. Visit our website at willag.org, and you can find all the details there. We probably ought to talk about something else that's on the website at the moment, too. And those are the numbers from the USDA stocks reports this morning. Corn now 1.79 billion bushel carryout, according to USDA. Average trade gas at 1823, but the 179 was the same as the January. Beans at 210 million, down from the 225 USDA was predicting, but higher than the average trade gas, Wayne, of 204. Although those numbers really didn't have much of an impact, I suppose, in today's trade.
Well, you know, we started off looking at them this morning. The markets, so the beans were called early right after the report, 10 to 15 higher, and corn 3 to 5 higher. And, you know, we opened up with some strength, but boy, it sure didn't last long. It seemed like we had some profit taking, some people that just weren't really thrilled with those. We were sort of feeling that didn't look for the crush to be down, and still looking at some of the weather. You know, as long that way to down south, and we'd get a little extra rain overnight. And then also along the way, we did not decrease any of the ethanol usage, thinking that maybe if we sell the Verison plants here soon and they would get bought reasonably enough that they would come back online. And also that they didn't lower the exports on the corn any, because the export's been good the last 3 weeks here. So thinking that they might possibly pop back into things. But the macro market sure took over in the afternoon, Todd.
And the macro markets in the afternoon. One of the things I think that maybe surprised the marketplace just a little bit for a while this morning, and one of the reasons things were called higher, was the global marketplace. USDA moved much more quickly in adjusting the South American numbers than they have in past times.
Yeah, I mean, basically we knew that they should knock those, but, you know, the bean number being knocked down as much as it was for Argentina, going down to 43.8 from the 49.5, you know, Argentina's last number was a 40.0 that way, but they also made some sort of comment. They thought that might be the lowest we'd see for a while, but still, we went down a lot faster than usual.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of concern out there about what the weather might do the rest of the month down in Argentina, and any of the good rain seems to be a little ways out. And also the way that the bailout package is going didn't seem to make the stock market happy at all. Stock market down over 373 as we talk.
Wayne, thanks much.
Talk to you.
All right. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. USDA on Tuesday morning released a new set of numbers with some ending stocks. Daryl Good is with us to talk about those. He's an ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Thanks for coming in, Daryl. We appreciate it today. Tell me about the numbers that you saw on Tuesday morning.
Well, for the domestic balance sheets for corn, soybeans, and wheat, the only change that USDA made was on the soybean side. They did increase their forecast of exports for the current year by 50 million bushels, but that was partially offset by a further reduction in the forecast of the domestic crush. That came down 35 million bushels. So ending stocks did drop 15 million bushels, now at 210. Roughly, that's where we started the year. We expect to end the year about there as well. No changes on the corn and wheat balance sheets. Tweaked the marketing year average price just a bit, but no changes in the supply or consumption numbers. The big changes worldwide, of course, came in South America. USDA did substantially lower the forecast of the current corn and soybean harvest in both Brazil and Argentina. The corn estimate in those two countries came down almost 200 million bushels, which is about 9% of the January forecast. So that's a huge cut. Soybean forecast came down almost 300 million bushels, or about 7% of the January forecast. So those are historically very large changes from month to month. I think the problem from a price standpoint is the market pretty well anticipated those cuts, and at the margin, some might have been expecting even larger cuts because of the severe summer weather there. So the market did not react positively to those reductions because they were pretty much built into what the market expected.
It is unusual for USDA to make such large changes month over month. That's usually much slower. Why do you think that the changes came? Is it just that severe in South America?
Apparently it is. Now, we did see reductions in January compared to December, so that process had already started. But this was a major move down, and I think does speak to the timing of the poor weather there. It came, and in the case of corn, the dryness and the heat in Argentina came right at the heart of pollination time there. And similarly on soybeans, in the reproductive stage of soybeans is when the weather was most severe. So that tends to take its toll on production prospects, and I think the USDA had to acknowledge that in today's report. Now, I guess the question is, have they captured all the damage yet, or might we see further reductions as time goes on and certainly as harvest gets underway in those two countries?
On the flip side, slack demand has made up for that, and balance sheets locally or domestically in the U.S. really haven't changed at this point.
It really, particularly on corn, now I think what's happened here is that we have a very low forecast for U.S. corn exports this year, and we had been worried that we were going to even meet that low forecast. I think what the smaller corn crop in South America means is that now we're likely to make that 1.75 billion bushels. Prior to that, it looked like we might fall a bit short, even though sales have picked up the last two or three weeks. So I think USDA did not raise their export forecast merely because without the reduction in the South American crop, they might have had to lower the export forecast.
Tell me about the ACRE program and what you and the ag economist upstairs are thinking. I talked to Nick Paulson in the last week. I talked to Gary Schnitke in the last couple of days. All seem to think that the ACRE program is actually a program worthwhile for producers to look at, if not to enter into on some of their units.
No, I think there's pretty general agreement that the counter-cyclical part of the ACRE program is more likely to kick in than the counter-cyclical component of the traditional program. In a case of corn, for example, we would not get counter-cyclical payments under the traditional program unless the marketing year average price dropped below $2.35. At this juncture, nobody expects that to happen in the foreseeable future. So the only part of the traditional program that looks like it will make payments, and it will, is the direct payment. That's on corn, 28 cents a bushel on your base yield. So to get into the ACRE program, it bumps your chances of getting a counter-cyclical payment because it's establishing state average revenue based on 2 years of relatively high prices. So our two-year average price on corn is going to be about $4 times the five-year Olympic average yield is going to set a pretty high state average revenue guarantee, so the chances are better that we might fall short of that guarantee in any particular year. The two difficulties there, I think, is one, producers have to give up 20% of their direct payments in order to go to the acre program. So they're going to give up $4 to $5 an acre to go this way. Secondly, to receive a payment, countercyclical payment under the acre program, not only does the state revenue have to drop below the guaranteed level, but the farm revenue has to drop below the base revenue as well. So there's a double trigger on the acre program, and both of those have to be met in order for a producer to get a payment. So I think there's a good chance that even in 2009 or sometime soon, we might trigger a payment under the state guaranteed revenue. Whether an individual farmer would be triggered or not, it would be depending on local conditions.
Interesting. So it would have behoove a farmer to think about it. How should they think about it? I suppose I was thinking as you were talking that they need to think about it along with their crop insurance. And the idea here is not that you're farming the farm programs, but that you're protecting income in years where you really need that income, which isn't always the case with some of the other farm programs. Right. And that can you use it in concert with your crop insurance and possibly lower what you purchase for crop insurance?
You know, I think the consensus is that you need to use it in conjunction with crop insurance, that it does not replace crop insurance because of the double trigger phenomenon. That is, there could be a payment triggered based on state average revenue, but an individual farmer that year may have been in a good producing area, have high yields, and not trigger a payment. But the converse is more concerning, is that the state revenue trigger is not reached, but an individual farmer has a poor year, poor yields, and low income, and would not receive a payment because the state level trigger was not reached. So that's where crop insurance, I think, is still important, so that if there is an individual farm loss and no state trigger, there can be a payment under the crop insurance. In terms of coverage level, the current thinking seems to be that because of likely lower spring price guarantees compared to last year, looks like we're going to be in the low $4 range on spring price guarantee on corn, maybe in the low $9 range on soybeans, is that producers may want to actually up their coverage levels in order to guarantee a satisfactory level of revenue.
Yeah, simply so, because they're cheap.
They're cheap, and because at 540 price guarantee last year, you say 75% coverage still gives me an awfully good floor on my revenue. With a $4 guarantee and a 75% coverage, now you're saying that floor may not cover my cost of production if I have a problem. I may want to bump that up to 80 or 85% coverage, so that I'm raising my revenue guarantee with the crop insurance.
And finally, because this works off of units as opposed to a farmer's whole farm, so he can have some farms that are in acre, he can have some farms that are in the traditional farm programs. For this year, if you were going to do it, would you, and test the acre program, would you put a unit that was in beans or in corn in acre?
You know, historically, Gary Schnitke's done a nice job of looking at historically, if we'd had an acre program, how often would the state-level trigger have been reached? And it appears that we reach that more often on corn than we would on soybeans, primarily because soybean yields are a little more consistent than corn yields. So we'll hit problems on corn yields more often than we do on state average soybean yields. So if you say if you're going to try it on one farm or another, the problem is you can't do it on the same farm. You can't do corn in one program and soybeans in a different program. You can't do acre and traditional on different crops on the same farm. But if you had a farm, say a small farm that was going to be all corn this year, you could do acre on that and traditional program on your other farms. I think the concern I have is you hear a lot of farmers saying, this is a bit complicated. I'm going to have to prove yields. I'm a little concerned about being able to prove a 5-year history of yields and what's that going to take? Maybe I'll lay out a year, see how this program works, and sign up in 2010. Frankly, it looks to me like because we're starting with such a high price level on the state level guarantee, that if this program is going to trigger a payment anytime soon, it's most likely to occur in 2009 than in subsequent years. Primarily, because we're starting with such a high price guarantee. That if market prices are lower in 2009 and we're using a two-year average for the price guarantee, that's going to pull it lower for the 2010 crop, which reduces then the probability of a payment. So there may be some benefits in saying, let's learn more, see how the program works, sign up next year. But you may forego the year that we're most likely for a payment.
So a whole unit in corn on your worst acres probably is best.
Right. Again, recognizing that you sign up farm by farm based on FSA number, and you have to be in the same program for both crops.
All right. Okay. Thanks much, Darryl. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Darryl Good is an Extension Ag Economist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Tuesday, we always talk about the agricultural energy. Stephen Platt is with us this afternoon from Archer Financial Services in Chicago. They're an ADM affiliate. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It looks like fear is gripping the economy again.
Oh, it sure has, and the crude market certainly reflecting that, with the market off over a buck and a half in the March, making new contract lows. Those problems are going to persist. We'll have the IEA report coming out tomorrow. I think that will generally show a further revision downward in economic growth forecasts in line with some of the IMF figures that were released earlier this month.
As the market drops, does it represent any opportunities for producers?
Well, you have to look at these prices, and some of these price levels are certainly some of the best prices you've seen in years in terms of both gasoline and diesel. And I think looking to lock in some of the cost side is certainly advisable here in terms of those markets. The cracks have generally, meaning the margins between like heating oil and gasoline to the crude, have come in as well. The gasoline crack, which got into as low as 1, though, has recently come back out toward 11. But relative to the experience of the past few years, those are still at the lower end of the ranges. And I think they are providing those opportunities here in which producers should maybe look to lock in prices, at least on the heating oil or diesel fuel needs and gasoline.
Thanks much, Stephen.
Sure enough.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. He's in Chicago. It is an ADM affiliate. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather forecast.
It's National Frozen Yogurt Day. It's also St. Dorothy's Day, patron of brewers, gardeners, and florists. On this day in agricultural history in 1617, Prospero Alpini died. An Italian physician and botanist, he is said to have introduced coffee and bananas to Europe and was among the first to artificially fertilize date palms. In 1685, Charles II, King of England, died. Known as the Merry Monarch, he introduced tea to England during his reign. And on December 23rd of 1675, he issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he had to revoke it a year later. In 1796, John Stevens Henslow was born, a British clergyman and botanist. He was a mentor of Charles Darwin. To help get farmers to apply scientific methods, he gave lectures on the fermentation of manure. He also showed Irish farmers how to extract starch from rotten potatoes during the potato famine of 1845. And in 1898, Rudolf Carl George Friedrich Leuckart died, a German zoologist and pioneer in the modern study of parasites. He was among the first to trace the life history of tapeworms and the liver fluke. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Tuesday afternoon, time to talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's take a look at the forecast for the agricultural world. Start with us here locally. It's still warm today.
It is, and we've been able to enjoy some warmer temperatures, and that's caused a lot of melting of ice and snow across the Midwest and Great Lakes. Do be ready, though, folks. Most of the nation is going to see a pretty active weather pattern. And it's a pattern where I don't see any real bitter cold Arctic air coming on in, so I don't think we've got to deal with severe cold. But we're going to see storms traverse the United States about every 2 to 3 days for the next week to 10 days or maybe longer, Todd. And this is going to produce good chances for moisture across the Midwest, the Corn Belt, and this is important, the Southern Plains that really needed some rain. They finally got some rain in West Texas, portions of Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska this past weekend, and there's more on the way. Rain, snow, and ice will be heading to the midsection of the country as these storms move through.
I know this is awful early, but we started talking about persistence last year in these little fronts that would come through, actually pretty good-sized fronts that would come through and drop rainfall in the Midwest. Do you see a pattern like that setting up this year?
I certainly do, and one little note of interest, and this hasn't been reported on very much, is that in late December and early January, we started to see the water temperatures in the Pacific start to cool off a little bit, and we're actually in a weak La Nina phase. That's where we were a year ago, and it is showing at least what we're seeing out in the Pacific in terms of these storms spaced apart about every 2 or 3 days is not uncommon in a weak La Nina pattern. So we may very well see a pattern not unlike what we saw last year around this time frame.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch that develop over the coming months and see if it persists right on into the spring planting season. It caused problems last year, and I suppose with the amount of fertilizer that wasn't put on this year, that could be even a bigger problem. But let's move to a place that we know about the problems. USDA releasing some numbers this morning out of South America showing that, in fact, not only are they saying they have a bad problem with weather there and the lack of rainfall that USDA believes them. Still dry there?
Yeah, it is. And there's been a little bit of activity down in the southern hemisphere. And we do see patterns that are changing a little bit that may make things a little more moist. Now, with that said, is it going to be enough to make up for the big soil moisture deficits, especially in the portions of Argentina and sections of Brazil? Probably not. And it may be a little too late in some areas. So the prospects for rain look better, Todd, but I don't know if it's going to be a big help.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Australia in the same boat. Of course, you probably have heard about their wildfires and drought conditions. They're a little bit dry as well, and they've got a little relief on the way, but that's another part of the globe to keep an eye on.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what he had to say again, you can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Not only can you find Don's comments there, but daily ag programming with updates of the ag futures and cash markets. You can listen to it on the website if you'd like. Sign up to have it delivered to you as a podcast, even over the telephone line at 217-333-3434, and it's all free. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agri- agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.